Satashi Shimad, His Divine Grace of Ayachatana, the Bhaktivedanta Goswami Shila, Prabhupada Kijai, Iskan, Founder Acharya, Shila Prabhupada Kijai, Ananda Goti, Vaishnava Vrinda Kijai, Namacharya, Shila Huridas Thakur Kijai, Rem Se Gaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya, Ramo Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shivasati Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kijaya Shishi Radhikrishna Gopikopata Sayam Gun Radhikunda Giri Govardhan Kijaya Vrindavanam Kijaya Maturidam Kijaya Jagadada Sami Kijaya Yamunamai Kijaya Shimadi Lassi Devi Kijaya Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kijaya Gaur Premananda Hariya. All glorious is some devotees, all glorious is some devotees, all glorious is some devotees. All glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga Shilpopad Ki Jai. So Omadana Timiranda Shaganjana Shlakaya Chakshuru Meditam Yena Tasmai Shri Guru Vena Maha. So today we are commemorating the appearance day of Grandfather Bhishma Pitamaha, and we are here at Govardhan, the most sacred place. So here's the story of Grandfather Bhishma's appearance, and we're going to speak about his appearance and also the lessons that he taught Yudhisthira Maharaj and the Pandavas as he was lying on the bed of arrows, which is very interesting. So once upon a time, there were the eight Vasus, and amongst these eight Vasus, there was one, his name was Jao. And Jao's wife wanted some of the milk from Vasishtha Muni's desire cow to give to her friend, who is a human being like us, because human beings get old and ugly. And so she wanted her friend to be young and pretty. That reminds me of another story I just read today. There was this Shumava. There were 100 or 1,000 daughters of this Kushimava who were extremely beautiful, and they were approached by the wind god, and the wind god said to them, I can make you eternally beautiful, you know, a long time in the heavenly planets. And they said, if you marry me, they said. And they said, no, we won't do this without our father's permission. How could you ask for such a horrible thing? And what he did is he made them look deformed. You probably heard that story, right? They all became completely deformed. Mm-hmm. Anyway, later on they married a great personality who straightened them up. So this earthly beauty is actually very, very temporary. It's like life is but a fading flower. Here today and gone tomorrow. That's why the gopis were lamenting. He says, you know, Krishna was interested in us when we were very young, and he just gives us up, these young girls of Mathura. Anyway, because youth is very fleeting. So that was the motivation behind Jao's wife wanting to steal Vasishtha Muni's desire cow, Kamadhenu. And so Vasishtha Muni naturally didn't like this, and he cursed the Vasus to be born on the earth planet, the eight Vasus. And the Vasus went and cried to him, you know, how can we be born on this earth planet? You know, this is hellish. And he said, all right, I give you the blessings that the seven of you, will have a very short life. But the one who was most responsible, because he got controlled by his wife, was Jao, you will have to live as long as those other seven would live, and as long as you would live, you know, like eight lifetimes, basically. So Jao was cursed. Meantime, there was a great king who went to heaven. His name was Mahabish. Mahabish was in heaven, enjoying seeing a dancing performance. Bharatanatyam or Kathakali, whatever they do there. He was watching that. And Ganga Devi was there also, and some wind blew her dress up, and then he stared, which is actually completely ill-mannered. And so Lord Brahma got angry, and he cursed Mahabish to go down to the earth planet. And so Mahabish was going down to the earth planet, and Ganga Devi was thinking, well, he liked me, so I want to go down with him. You know, she liked the attention. Anyway, this is a spiritual thing. It's a pastime in Mahabharata. In the meantime, Jao and the other Vasus, they go up to Ganga Devi and say, you know, we need a decent mother. You know, those earth mothers, they just don't make it. So we'd like to have you as our mother. So everything works out together, you know. So she said, of course, I'll be your mother. And, you know, I'll take care of this thing of giving you a short life, because I'll kill you right after you're born. And good deal. So anyway, so what happens is that Mahabish takes birth as Shantanu. And Shantanu is walking by the Ganges. Here we go. We're telling a story of Grandfather Bhishma now. We got to the point of Shantanu walking by the Ganges. Shantanu had a habit of being hit by that weapon, you know, that Kamastra. Should I tell that story? Should I tell that story, the Kamastra?
I'm not going to tell you.
We were just, anyway, I have to tell you, it's so funny, that the, in the Ramayana, the Valmiki Ramayana, Lord Ram gets all these weapons from Viswamitra Muni. And one of the weapons he gets is called the Kamastra weapon. And it's so interesting. There's a whole list of weapons. And it's described that this weapon, when it's fired, makes the person so lusty he forgets to fight. So you defeat your enemy that way. He just falls in love. He falls in love. And hopefully he doesn't fall in love with you, but he finds a girl to fall in love with. This is Kali Yuga. Anything can happen. Anyway, so getting back to the story. So Mahavishnu Shantanu at this point is going by the Ganges, and he sees Ganga Devi, and it's love at first sight. He looks at her and says, "Wow, who are you? Will you marry me?" Doesn't even do a background check, you know, just completely, isn't it? It's just like, boom. And she, of course, it's all preordained. And she says, "Yes, but let's have a prenuptial contract." You know, prenuptial contract. That if you disagree or, you know, speak harshly or anything that I do or say, I'm out of here. And he was thinking, she's so sweet, how can I ever disagree with anything she does? Isn't it? I mean, this is the illusion that people are in, you know. Sugar and spice and everything nice. Anyway, so. So, I'm sorry, I keep myself from being humorous. So anyway, so, but it's true. I mean, he just thinks, you know, I'll never disagree with her. Okay, they get married. Just one of these Gandharva marriages, you know, they exchange garlands. And they're married, and guess what happens? She starts to throw each and every baby into the Ganges River, which was the deal. You know, because the Vashus wanted to live a very short life, except for the last one. And so he's just holding his breath. He just, she'll leave me, oh no. This shows how, what attachment can do. That here is your wife killing your kids, and he's afraid of agitating or aggravating her. He's afraid of losing her. It's actually like, I was just thinking about the political situation in the United States, that they just had this whole vote for impeachment, or they didn't vote for it yet, but anyway, there's this party of the president, which is, I won't name this, who it is, and they're afraid of angering him. Not because he'll leave them, but because he'll go on Twitter and abuse them. So people function on the basis of fear, isn't it? And they throw away their sense of morality and justice just because of fear and attachment. It's amazing. So it's a lesson for us. You know, we should always act morally and ethically, no matter what the and for Krishna consciousness, obviously, morally, ethically, on the higher spiritual platform. No matter what repercussion, who hates us, or what happens to our reputation, we should always do what Krishna wants. And that's a lesson we can learn from these instances like this. So anyway, but Shantanu, he just ignores, or, you know, bites his tongue or his lip, and sees all the kids just being put into the Ganges and killed. And finally, comes to the eighth one, who is Jao. And he says to his wife, "Stop!" She says, "Goodbye." You disagree with me. I mean, it's interesting, you have these other stories too, like Pururava Nirvasi, which is like a, quite similar in the Bhagavatam, where she basically says, you know, I don't want to see you without clothes, you should always give me food with ghee in it, and you have to protect my little lambs. She didn't have dog pets, because she was higher class. And then the Gandharvas actually arranged that they stole the lambs one day, and then he ran after the lambs after she chastised him for being a eunuch. he ran after the lambs, and because he was in bed, he was naked, and they had a spotlight on their helicopter. Or something like that. It says they're showing a light.
They're showing a light?
Yeah, they're showing a light. That's what the Bhagavatam says. They shone a light, so there's like a spotlight on the helicopter, or whatever.
Because they wanted her back.
Yeah, they wanted her back. It was actually Indra sent him, because he wanted her back. He wanted Urvasi back. Obviously, he was missing her. That's the whole point of the story. And then she just goes back, and then he's just like so bereft that he actually travels around the world looking for her. You remember that story? And finally, he finds her in one holy place, and she agrees. Okay. One day a year, I'll be with you. And so, like, for him, it's like Christmas. You know, 364 days left till Urvasi, you know? And he's counting down. He just can't stand it. And after a while, she arranges for a replica Urvasi, and he discovers it's not the real Urvasi. And basically, he ends up performing a sacrifice because it changes into Treta Yuga. And he goes back to Urvasi. But the attachment makes people crazy. Is that? Yes. Like Cupid, he's Mada, you know. And he has these arrows, form, taste, smell, you know, the objects of the senses. Anyway, this is another lesson we can learn from this. Of course, we're going to have an engagement in 2 days, so otherwise you speaking about stuff like this. You know, so anyway. Yeah, we don't want to get initiated by this guy, you know, he's just like he doesn't understand love. Anyway, so Bhishma stops, she takes the kid away, and he's of course Devavrata. And he learns politics from Brihaspati, the Vedas from Vashishta, and fighting from Parashuram. So he got his education, that's his Gurukula. Later on he's called Bhishma, which means a terrible vow, and we'll tell that story when he took that vow. So then, later on he joins his father, okay, and he's made the Yuvaraj. That means the prince is going to take over after the father leaves the kingdom and the father passes away. He's the prince, the crown prince, it's called. So then his father one day is by the Ganges again. You gotta be careful with Ganges here. And there's this girl, Satyavati, who is actually the mother of Vyasadeva. And there's a whole story about that too, is that this is a side story. But anyway, so Parashara Muni saw her when he was crossing on the boat. She was a boat lady. Actually, she's not a boat lady, but I'll describe what I mean by that. And he just said, you know, we got to have a kid. And she said, you know, we're right in the middle of the river, and it's not a proper. He says, no problem. Raise a fog, an island, the kid's born. And he blesses her with becoming so fragrant that for 8 miles, people would just like fall in love just by smelling her fragrance. Previously, she had a fishy smell because she actually appeared out of a fish, but she was the daughter of King Basu, who sort of like his seminal fluid impregnated a fish, and then whole story like that. So Satyavati is there in the Ganges, and Shantanu becomes really attracted to her. Again, he has his real problem. And he goes to her father, because that's the right thing. You would go to the father of the girl. And the father says, no way. She's not getting married to you because you already have a crown prince. And so the father, he basically goes into a state of extreme depression. I mean, like clinical. He just like basically doesn't wake up. You know, he has no impetus to do anything, and he keeps chanting, at least internally, the name Satyavati, Satyavati, Satyavati. There's another instance of love. Anyway, so sorry, I didn't make up this story. So he's completely in love, and Bhishma really doesn't know what's happening to dad, good old dad. So he asks the prime minister or one of the ministers, and minister tells him, and he says, well, I gotta pacify my father, you know, I don't want my father to die from starvation, because basically he can't even eat, he's so depressed. So he goes to the fisherman and says, you know, I want your daughter to be my father's wife. Interesting, you know, the son is arranging for the for his father to get married. So he says, I want your daughter. And the fisherman says, well, there's a problem. Her child has to become the next king. And Bhishma, or Devavrata, he says, okay, I renounce my position as crown prince. And the fisherman says, well, then your child may claim the throne. He says, well, I renounce my position as ever being married. I'll never be married. And that's called Bhishma, a terrible vow. For a Kshatriya, that's really a terrible vow, because a Kshatriya has one of these injunctions that if a lady comes to you and she's, you know, she's a normal lady, then you have to accept her. Like, it's interesting, when Arjuna came back after seeing that Krishna disappeared from the planet, Yudhisthira Maharaj said, what was the problem? Was there some lady you didn't accept properly? You know, because he thought that could be a cause of despondency in Arjuna's part, rather than, I mean, actually he knew Krishna had left the planet, but he was just trying to think in his mind, you know, maybe, hopefully it's something else. You know, because he was just really didn't want Krishna to disappear. So for Kshatriya to vow not to get married is just like, wow. Not really proper. Kshatriya must be married. Anyway. So what happened is that he said it, and the demigods showered flowers because Bhishma made that vow and said, wow, this is an amazing vow. Amazing vow. So he goes back, brings his father's bride back to his father, and his father says, wow. Shantanu says, I am so pleased with you. I can give you the greatest benediction of not dying unless you want to die. Now that's not necessarily a benediction, and didn't turn out to be such a great benediction. And we shouldn't want that benediction, because if you say you can't die unless you want to die, we may be just like completely incapacitated and want to die. And we're not going to be able to die unless we decide to die, and that's sinful to decide to die many times. You know, in many cases. Anyway, so then there was this marriage. Satyavati and Chandra got married, and they had two kids, Vichitravirya and Chitrangada. And unfortunately, Chitrangada was killed by a Gandharva. And so there's Vichitravirya left. So, for Vichitravirya, this is such an interesting story, I love this story. He was a little weakling, so he couldn't do his own Swayamvara visit, you know, couldn't go to a Swayamvara and get a bride. So he had to have someone little with some muscles to do it. So his half-brother, Bhishma, said, I'm going to get a bride for my half-brother. So Bhishma goes goes to Kashi and kidnaps the king of Kashi's daughters. That's Amba, Ambika, and Ambalika. That means Amba, little Amba, very little Amba. So the point is that Amba, the oldest one, was in love with Shalva Raj. And so after Bhishma kidnapped them and brought them to be married to Vichitravirya, she reveals that actually I'm in love, it's not proper. And Bhishma says, okay, you can go back in. Actually, when Bhishma kidnapped them, he defeated Shalva too. So there was a lot of embarrassment for this poor Kshatriya. And a Kshatriya is not supposed to accept anything in charity. It's unacceptable. Especially a wife in charity. So then what happens? Like you see, Krishna accepted, most of his wives Krishna accepted by the strength of his arms. Some of them were given actually gladly. But it's not like charity. It's just like Kshatriya type of stuff. So anyway, so then, okay. So Amba goes back and she says to Shalvaraj, honey, I'm back. And Shalvaraj says, get out of here. You know, if I accept you back after you've been with Bhishma, this is going to be the worst thing for my reputation. I mean, it's really heartless. Isn't it? I mean, the poor girl, she was chased and everything. And he's just like, just go back. And so then she goes back and she says, actually, you're the one who kidnapped me, Bhishma. So you should marry me. And Bhishma says, no. I've taken this vow. And actually, he was thinking, according to the Mahabharata, someone who hates your guts, you definitely don't want to get married. So he's thinking both things. I mean, it's the worst possible arrangement, even if he was going to get married. So then, eventually, Amba goes to her uncle. Her uncle is the friend of Parashuram. And Parashuram says to his disciple, martial arts disciple, Bhishma, you got to marry this girl. Bhishma says, no way, Guru Maharaj. So Prabhupada said, in other circumstances, that's the one time you can disobey the order of a spiritual master. Anyway. So Bhishma, of course, if Bhishma happens to be, I mean, if Parashuram happens to be your spiritual master, you better be ready to fight with him. So it was, Parashuram said, you're not going to obey my order voluntarily, you're going to obey my order involuntarily or die. So for 23 days is a fight between the guru and the disciple, described in the Mahabharata. And Bhishma actually, in one sense, wins the fight. He's ready to fire an arrow and he's stopped by the demigods. You know, you can't do that. You know. And so Parashuram realizes, you know, I got a pretty good disciple there. He's more powerful than me. So Amba gets so disturbed. Oh my God, there's no other recourse. Let me do penance to Lord Shiva to be reborn as the cause of death for Bhishma. So she's later on, this is really interesting. Some of you don't know this story. She was later on born as the daughter of Drupada, Shikhandi. Sometimes in the movie it says Shikhandini. But anyway, Shikhandi is the name, according to the Mahabharata. But the problem is that Drupada wants another son who can help him. And Lord Shiva has told Drupada, that this, whoever's born at this particular time, is a boy. And Drupada has so much faith in Lord Shiva, he says it's a boy. Looks like a girl. It's a boy, because Lord Shiva says it's a boy. And so what he does, he arranges a marriage with his daughter, whom he thinks is a boy, with a girl. Now today it would be all right to do something like that. So but anyway, he arranges. And so what happens is that this girl, who's also a princess from another kingdom, this girl gets married to another girl, you know, because the daughter of Drupada is dressed like a boy. So, but then, you know, after the marriage, they go to their bedroom and she discovers it's a girl. And she goes back to her father and says, Dad, it's a girl. They married me to a girl. And the father was, other king was so upset he got ready to attack Drupada. And so she is thinking, I am at fault for this. It's my problem. So then she goes in exile. And while she's in exile, and the far she's crying and everything like that, she runs into a yaksha named Stunakarna. And yaksha says, what's the problem, little girl? And the yaksha says, I can solve your problem. You can take my masculinity and I'll take your femininity. For one day, you know, just to get rid of this king who's going to attack your father, just one day, okay? You're not going to be a girl for more than a day. It's enough. So she exchanges for a short time with this yaksha. Meantime, the yaksha is there. He doesn't go out of the house because, you know, his friends are going to make fun of him. Imagine, you know, that one day you change your gender. I mean, I can imagine, like, if I, one day I, you know, woke up as a girl, and I was like, he said, Gumara, can you come out? I'm really not feeling well. Just leave the prasadam outside my door. Isn't it? Isn't that what you would do, my boy?
I'd be very happy if that happened.
Anyway, I'm not talking as a gopi, I'm talking about something, you know, just like a regular female. So, this is a problem. So, Kuvera comes, you know, he's in charge of all the yakshas. And Kuvera says, where's my friend, Stuna Karna? He said, well, he became, did his exchange. So, and Kuvera is so upset, he curses him. All right, you did that, you're going to stay like that. Until Shikhandini, or Shikhandi, dies. So Shikhandi was actually, the movie is actually wrong. You know, if you watch the Mahabharata movie, it shows this transformation only for a day, but actually it was a transformation until he died or she died. So that's at least what the Mahabharata says. All right, so fast forward. We go to the Battle of Kurukshetra. I'm not going to tell the whole Mahabharata tonight. Bhishma is the commander-in-chief. He doesn't really fight seriously with Arjuna. Duryodhana taunts Bhishma, saying, you know, you're not fighting seriously. Bhishma says, I have 5 golden arrows, and I'm going to kill the Pandavas with them, and I imbue them with all my potency. So tomorrow all the Pandavas are going to die by these arrows. And Duryodhana thinks, I'm going to keep them safe. And then Krishna says to Arjuna, you should go and ask Duryodhana for a boon and ask for the arrows. So Arjuna goes and he says, Duryodhana, you know, because at night they actually met together until they started fighting at night. And that's of course the story of Ghatotkacha later on. So then Arjuna asks for the arrows and he takes these arrows away. And so Grandfather Bhishma doesn't kill the Pandavas the next day. And actually, Arjuna was due a favor from Duryodhana too, because Arjuna had saved Duryodhana from the Gandharvas later on, earlier. There's a whole story about that. So Duryodhana tells Grandfather Bhishma, make 5 more. Bhishma says, can't, because I gave all my potency to the last 5 arrows. But he vows either to kill Arjuna the next day or cause Krishna to break his promise. And Krishna, of course, breaks his promise, as we know. And then finally, Krishna tells Arjuna to use Shikhandi as a shield. So Shikhandi is in the chariot in front of Arjuna, and Grandfather Bhishma just fires his arrows in every other direction, but not in Arjuna's chariot. And then Arjuna is told by Krishna, shoot your arrow at Grandfather Bhishma. So he keeps shooting. And Grandfather Bhishma is so powerful, he keeps rushing at Arjuna, in spite of being filled with arrows, you know, hundreds of arrows. And then finally, Arjuna fires enough so that Grandfather Bhishma is knocked down. It's described in the Mahabharata that Grandfather Bhishma had so many arrows in his body he couldn't put a finger between them. Of course, not in the head, but everywhere else. So he's lying on this bed of arrows. And 2 things. I mean, he wanted a pillow to put his head, so Arjuna fired arrows and made a pillow fit for a warrior with like 2 crisscross arrows, or 2 or 3. And then Grandfather Bhishma was thirsty, so he fired an arrow on the ground, and the Ganga Devi came out in a stream. Anyway, that's the story of the fighting. Now we're going to talk about the instructions, which is really, this is the most interesting thing for me, the instructions given for human beings to Yudhisthira, because these instructions are very important for us. Even though it's not like a dramatic story or something like that, but it's important for us to understand the 9, Actually, there's many things here. And we'll go over them rather quickly. So Beaver Dave advised for all human beings 9 qualifications. And the bed of arrows. Actually, another thing is that even though he was filled with arrows, Krishna blessed him that he wouldn't be experiencing pain and his mind would be clear at the very end. And then, of course, he left this world when the sun started to go to the north again. That's like after the winter solstice. You know, it's like the right after the 23rd of November. December. That's when the sun starts to go to the north. Previous going to the south. So when you, if you want to know when Grandfather Bhishma passed away, it's right after that particular point. And of course, the Battle of Kurukshetra was during the month of December, and you have this, you know, Gita Jayanti during the month of December, generally. So people ask, you know, when did the battle take place? It was during the month of December. So Bhishma Dev, in talking to Yudhisthira Maharaj, because Yudhisthira Maharaj was all bereft after the battle, he had taken responsibility for killing all the soldiers and leaving all the women unprotected, and he was ready to renounce everything. Grandfather Bhishma wanted to tell him that it was his service to become the emperor. So these are the qualities that Bhishma advised for all human beings, and he gave 9 qualifications. One is not to become angry. That's interesting. Not to become angry. Of course, we understand anger can be used in Krishna's service, but not to be angry because we are frustrated, like Krishna says in the Gita, you know, when contemplating sense objects, one gets attached. From attachment, one gets lusty, and lust then comes anger. So, in other words, there's an appropriate use of anger, number one. Number two is not to lie. You know, but there is an appropriate use of lying, too. And Grandfather Bhishma actually recognized that at the end, because one of the mistakes he made in his pastimes was that he considered morality to be the rules rather than based on the repercussions of following a particular action. There's two. There's several different philosophies of morality and ethics. After the battle, he understood that consequentialism was the important philosophy of ethics, not simply that you follow a rule. Because his rule that he followed, which caused disaster, was that he vowed never to oppose the king or the emperor to please his father, because he, you know, because he was dedicated to his father, and also because he wanted his father to marry Satyavati. So he promised that. But you can break a promise when it actually has a good result. But one has to be very careful about that. Very, very, very careful. And Grandfather Bhishma gives the example when he's on the bed of arrows. He says, once upon a time, understanding he made a mistake, once upon a time there was a bunch of dacoits who were chasing a family, because I guess the family had money or the family did something, and they wanted to kill the members of the family. The family takes shelter in an ashram, some sage's ashram. Dacoits go to the sage and they say, where's the family? The sage says, I can't tell a lie, you know, they're here. And they get killed. So in that case, you lie. You could lie to save someone's life. Of course, Shukracharya gives other reasons for lying, which I'm not going to mention, is it? You remember that? You don't remember the words.
Yeah. Should I tell something funny now?
They said when talking to a woman.
Yeah, but the funny thing is,
what?
In one of the Acharya's commentaries on
yeah.
The thing about lying at a wedding.
Yeah.
The lie that you're allowed to tell at a wedding
yeah.
is you're allowed to tell the bride and groom that they're beautiful. Mm-hmm. No matter how ugly they are. But you can't say that after the wedding. But on the wedding day,
you can say
lie
that.
About the attractiveness.
Yeah, there was that other story I told that someone said, there were two men, and one was bragging how pretty his wife was. And he said, oh, you got the most pretty wife. And the second one, you heard this story before. But anyway, the second one says, you should see my wife. And the first man says, is she more pretty? And the man says, no, my wife's an optician. I think you understand. So anyway, so lying, so we have to take these things not as rituals, but in the proper context. When, you know, obviously we don't lie, we tell the truth, we have to be respected, because if a devotee lies, then no one will respect that devotee again. Once you're caught lying, it just takes one time. Then people just don't trust you anymore. Three, to equally distribute wealth. Kshatriya's dharma. Next one is to forgive. That's really important. We're dealing with this one issue. I'm not going to mention what it's about. In ISKCON, where someone did something and they repented and paid their dues and everything like that, and people just aren't ready to forgive them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just, and it could be something that could really benefit the movement, but people just are resentful. They want retribution. Mm-hmm. So, but this is part of the nine qualifications Grandfather Bhishma advocated. Number one is to beget children only in one's legitimate wife, that's obvious. To be pure in mind and hygienic in body. Not to be inimical toward anyone. To be simple. That doesn't mean simple-minded. It means, you know, accepting what's necessary. That's what simplicity means. And the last one is to support servants or subordinates. In other words, to be kind and concerned with their welfare. And then there's more here. Then Bhishma continued, Then Bhishma continued, also advised to get freedom from anger. He was giving some instructions. One should learn how to forgive. Two, to be free from unlawful desires, one should not make plans. It doesn't mean that all plans are bad. You know, he who fails to plan plans to fail. You know, so if you're doing something for Krishna, you plan, you know, you have to, but not plans for enjoyment. So much wealth do I have today, so much more will I, you know, conquer my enemy. I'm going to have this. It's like this man that Prabhupada talked about who was a potter. You know, and he had one pot that was all the possessions he had, he made a beautiful pot. And he was thinking, I'll sell this pot and I'll get two pots. And sell two pots and I'll make profit and get four pots, you know, exponentially, 2, 4, 8, 16, 32, 64, 128, 256. Anyway, so he was thinking like this. And he was thinking, then I'll become very rich. And when I'm rich, I'll get married, and if my wife doesn't listen to me, I'll kick her. And, and so he went like that, and he kicked his initial investment and lost it. Prabhupada told that story. You heard that before or
no?
No. Oh, you never heard that story? You heard that story. Prabhupada's a Prabhupada story. So, you know, you make all these plans, just do something. In other words, like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, trust no future, however pleasant. And next one is, by spiritual culture, one should be able to conquer sleep. In other words, you have a purpose. I'll just unpack these things. If you have a purpose in life, then you have a reason to get up in the morning and do something. You want to sleep like Prabhupada, you know, he basically said, Prabhupada says, sleep is ignorance. So, of course, we need a certain amount of sleep in order to function properly, but at the same time, we shouldn't just want to sleep because we have a purpose. Once you have a purpose, then you can really overcome depression or other things, unless it's something chemical. But anyway, four, by tolerance only can one conquer desires and avarice. Tolerance means being satisfied with what you get. You know, nicha nichanam, chaitanas, chaitanam, ekobaholam, yoga dharati kama. And the next one is disturbances from various diseases can be avoided, here's mine, by regulated diets. Everybody hear that? By regulated diets. Regulated means That's simply, well, I'm eating the same thing that'll kill me every day. And it's my regulation. Regulated diet means something, not accepting more than you need, just keep yourself healthy. The body, we were talking about this before, the body belongs to Krishna. And if you borrow someone's car, you better change the oil on it and put the right oil in it. You know, if you're supposed to put 10W-40 and you put, you know, whatever, 5W in it, you can end up with an engine that has problems. By self-control, one can be free from false hopes. Interesting. Money can be saved by avoiding undesirable association. Because when you associate with people, they'll encourage you to spend money, or you go on the internet, especially now, they have this content management software, CMS, that you go and you look for something on the internet, and then for the next year you're bombarded with advertisements for the same thing. Somehow or other, you know, the computer or the internet knows what you want. I mean, it's really interesting. Well, the companies have this, the CMS, content management software. So you have to avoid this undesirable associate looking at things. Look what happened to a John Meal. Not only did he lose money, he almost lost his whole life. By practice of yoga, one can control hunger. Bhakti yoga. Worldliness can be avoided by cultivating the knowledge of impermanence. Dizziness can be conquered by rising up. This is from the Bhagavatam, actually Prabhupada's purport, these statements, if you remember. False arguments can be conquered by factual ascertainment. Talkativeness can be avoided by gravity and silence. By prowess, I mean strength, one can avoid fearfulness. And of course, Krishna says in the Gita, Vaya Sattva Samshuri Jnana Yoga Vavasati, that's spiritual prowess, that if one is situated in transcendental knowledge, and of course, purified goodness and Krishna consciousness, then one becomes Abhaya, like Prabhupada's name, Abhaya Charanaravinda, one who's taken shelter at Krishna's feet and therefore fearless. And finally, perfect knowledge can be obtained by self-cultivation. In other words, finding out who you are, what the purpose of life is. These are the instructions. And this comes from Srila Prabhupada, and there was, let's see if we have time for one other further thing. Yes, it's only 6:04. Another part of the research I did for Bhishma is where? Oh, here. Finally, let's see how many pages is here in this one. Oh, yeah, this is easy. These are the final pastimes from the Srimad Bhagavatam. I already told the whole history. I told that Yudhisthira was fearful. So when Bhishma came ready to pass away, all the rishis came, Krishna, Arjuna, the demigods, the Brahmins, Narada Muni, Vyasadeva, Shukadeva Goswami was there, Gautama Rishi, Kashyapa Muni was there. And Bhishma started worshipping Krishna and shed tears, not simply because he was in ecstasy seeing Krishna, but he shed tears for the Pandavas' suffering. And he basically said, this is due to the time factor. He said, even devotees are subjected to it. Kala is the wish. He presents his Kala as the wish of Krishna. And then he reveals that no one knows the plan of Krishna. One must simply accept. Wow. And Bhishma tells Yudhisthira, Krishna is God. Even though you accepted him as a friend, advisor, etc., Krishna is so merciful that in spite of being equal to everyone, he has come to me now. So he's feeling really grateful at this particular point. That even though he's equal to everyone, amazing. And then Krishna manifested four arms, and then Bhishma began to speak after you just inquired about religious principles, about what we just talked about, Varnashram. He talked about Varnashram, the qualities, charity, king's duty, salvation, women's duties, and then the sun started to go to the north. Bhishma fixes his mind on Krishna, stops his senses, remembers Krishna in a chivalrous mood in Partha Sarathi, that means the driver of Arjuna, and he remembers Krishna's wounds, which is described in the Bhagavatam, that just like Krishna accepted his wounds like lover's bites, basically. And the chariot wheel that he was threatened to be attacked by. And then he remembers the rasa dance, which is interesting, and the Rajasuya sacrifice. And as he's remembering this and Krishna's in front of him, he leaves this world, passes away, and drums play from the heavenly planets and flowers fall from the sky. And that's Grandfather Bhishma. So, anyone have any questions? That's a really tour de force, as they say. Yeah?
You were saying that then his wounds are like...
Krishna's wounds. We're talking about Krishna's wounds. That he was firing his arrows at Krishna, but Krishna was coming at him with the chariot wheel. And Krishna has a spiritual body, first of all. It's described in the Upanishads that Krishna has Ashnavi Ram. Krishna doesn't have veins in his body. Like, if I bleed, it's because I have veins and arteries. And as you get older, you can see him. See? I don't need an x-ray anymore. So, isn't it? It's interesting. And you bruise much more easily when you get older. Welcome to old age. So Krishna doesn't have a material body. And so, obviously, you know, Krishna doesn't have blood in his body. But Krishna acts like an ordinary person when he comes down to this earth planet. And he has these leelas where sometimes he acts fearful, Mother Yashoda, you know, just Mother Yashoda's running after him with a stick. And he feels afraid because he actually gets in the mood. And so Grandfather Bhishma is firing these arrows, some of them are hitting Krishna's body. And Krishna manifests these things on his body as if he were actually a blood and guts person.
What was it that he manifested?
He manifested the...
But did they look like something?
Yeah, like our wounds. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Like if we had been hit.
He's asking about Vishwa Chakravarti Thakur's commentary.
Yeah.
Imagine.
He what?
He understood.
So he just misheard. He just didn't hear it clearly.
He understood.
That it was like the lover.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I'm making that point. I'm getting to that point. But he wanted to know what they look like. That was his question. He wasn't asking me about that particular point, which I'll get to in a second. It was like, they look like regular wounds. But Krishna experienced this as a loving exchange. Like, I mean, I'm a sannyasi, I don't know what to do, I love his bites. I mean, it's kind of crazy. You know, it's like, I mean, what do I know about these things? But anyway, you know, biting, I only bite prasadam, what to speak of. You know, anyway, so, but he experienced it as a loving exchange in the mood of chivalry. Krishna has these indirect rasas. There's seven indirect rasas. There's five direct ones. You know, you can be passively worship Krishna, you can be a servant, you can be his friend, you can be his parent, or you can be his conjugal lover. But these seven indirect rasas flavor the direct rasas. And indirect is things like ghastliness, humor, which I like a lot, and and chivalry is another one. And so there was actually, I guess, a little ghastliness and chivalry and anger, you know, all these things were sort of mixed there, the indirect rasas. And so Krishna was experiencing this as an exchange, because Krishna is known as Rasa Raj. He's the enjoyer of all the rasas. You know, Krishna enjoys anger. He enjoys anger, he enjoys humor. Read the Nectar of Devotion, you can see how Krishna enjoys all these different rasas. And so he was enjoying this exchange with Grandfather Bhishma and making believe, you know, through his yoga maya, that he actually was injured. He had these injuries. So he experienced it as a loving exchange. That was the whole point. Like, So anyway, so the Krishna enjoyed it like that, and Bhishma also enjoyed that exchange because he knew Krishna was God. I mean, he had so many experiences with Krishna previously. You know, Krishna, for example, Duryodhana, when Krishna came to try to make peace with the Pandavas, with the Kuru, sorry, so they would give the Pandavas something, Duryodhana tried to capture Krishna. And then Krishna showed this universal form. Bhishma was there, he saw it. And, you know, so he knew there's God there. So he was enjoying this exchange. Krishna was enjoying this exchange between, you know, like people have wrestling matches with their friends sometimes, right? Or like sometimes you see little kittens, they wrestle with each other. And they're, of course, they're practicing later on, you know, but to do things, but they're actually enjoying it. Prabhupada one time he saw kittens wrestling, says there's loving and cats. So that's the sort of thing it was. It was like a loving exchange, you know. But, you know, serious loving exchange. Does that answer the question?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Mahabharata is amazing. The whole Mahabharata, I've read the whole Mahabharata a few times. And the Ramayana. They're just amazing. Amazing what's in there. And, you know, one is Krishna conscious, because I don't claim to be Krishna conscious. But if one sees three things in a Krishna conscious way, you actually see Krishna on every page of the Mahabharata. If you don't understand Krishna, then you won't understand the Mahabharata at all. Then you get bewildered. And that's why Vyasadeva was chastised by Narada Muni for bewildering people by composing the Mahabharata, because most people wouldn't understand, you know, that Krishna's God by reading the Mahabharata. They just like, no, it's an adventure story, you know. Like there was, Prabhupada told the story about one king, I think it was a Muslim king, who said, or Hindu king, I don't remember if it was Muslim or Hindu, he said, I want a Mahabharata composed about me. You have to go? Okay, that's a loving step. So he said, I want you to write a Mahabharata about me. And then the sage took his time, and the king said, have you written your Mahabharata about me yet? You know, because he wanted to be the center of the Mahabharata. And then the sage said, I was just thinking, you know, who are the other four husbands for your wife? And the king said, well, forget about that. Get back my bar, you know. I want another four husbands for my wife. Anyway, so that's the story. Papa told that story. So, anyway, this is Mahabharata Ramayana. I love the Ramayana, actually. I'm a devotee of the Ramayana. Because the Ramayana is just, it's filled with Dharma. It's filled with Dharma, heroism, and sacrifice. And, you know, there's some parts of the Ramayana that are not so great, such as Sita being sent away. That part, you know, I have some trouble with, but I understand philosophically why Sita was sent away. Yes?
Is there a particular version of Mahabharata that you suggest, like, written by a certain author?
The Ganguly translation. It's like two giant volumes. But if you're interested, I have one on my internet, and the internet in my computer.
Oh, yeah.
I can send it to you.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. What's that?
The two keys. He's asking for a copy as well.
Yeah, I know.
I'd definitely be interested.
Yeah, but it's a long read. It's a really long read. It's not like the ISKCON editions. You probably don't want to have your back to the deities. Turn to a corner or something like that. But it's big.
Is that the one with the Sanskrit and then the transliterations and everything too?
No, that's the Ramayana I have, is with the Sanskrit.
That was hard.
Yeah, well, the Ramayana I have is written in Old English, which is really hard. It's hard reading. But I have a more modern translation of the Ramayana. I also have someone who read the whole Valmiki Ramayana. And I have it all on MP3, so.
Oh, that's audio?
Audio. MP3 is audio. So I have the whole Ramayana, the Valmiki Ramayana being recited by a professional reciter, a good translation of Valmiki Ramayana.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you find a good English translation of Ramayana?
That's also, Gita Press is a good translation. And but that's old English. And then there's a more modern translation that's pretty much in line. I like the Gita Press one the best because it's more in line with the actual Sanskrit.
What do you think of the Ramcharitmanas, Tulsidas?
Prabhupada didn't think very much of it. Prabhupada said Tulsidas has a tinge of Mayavad philosophy. I mean, like you see people, like here you go around Govardhan, you see Panchamukha Hanuman.
Mm-hmm.
That's Mayavada stuff.
Yeah, I know.
And that's where people get that, you know, from Tulsidas. Tulsidas is a great devotee. Now, I'm not criticizing him, but it's his meditation on Lord Ram. He read the Valmiki Ramayana, mm-hmm. and he wanted to present Lord Ram's pastimes in vernacular Hindi. That's why he's very popular.
Yeah.
But in South India, there's also other editions of the Ramayana. Like in Telugu, there's an edition of the Ramayana. Tamil, there's an edition of the Ramayana. Mm. And they're all a little bit different. Mm. But the original is the Sanskrit edition of Valmiki. So that's the one I read. And, you know, in Fiji, when I go to Fiji, people tell me all their stories from the Tulsidas Ramayana. It's not there in the Valmiki Ramayana. Yeah, it's good to be authentic. But Prabhupada said, the bona fide Ramayana is the Valmiki one. And he composed it. Valmiki composed it. He was a dacoit. You know that story. That's even in the Tulsidas Ramayana. He was a dacoit and he chanted Mara, Mara, Mara. And mm-hmm. he became a great devotee. Valmiki Ramayana is amazing. Devotees should read it. I mean, it's just amazing. The detail it goes into. The side stories about Vishwamitra Muni and but even about Tadaka, such an interesting demon she was. You know Tadaka? She was the mother of Marich. Tadaka, Subhalu, and Tadaka, you know, she was the first demon killed by Ram. She was a lady. It's actually in Sanskrit, it's Tadaka, not Tadaka. But she was a lady. She was in this forest, and she was devouring everything in the forest. And previously she had been a yaksha, not a rakshasa, but she was cursed to become a rakshasa, because she tried to attack a sage. So she became this rakshasa, ugly. Previously she was very pretty. And then she became ugly by being cursed by the sage. And her son was Uncle Marich. You know Marich, right? Am I? Well, he's not from Fiji, he doesn't know.
I heard stories, but I forgot.
Yeah, then, you know, they're Fiji. He's not from the north, you know. So the Ramayana is not as prominent where he's from. But in North India, Ramayana, you know, especially UP and Bihar, then you've got the Ramayana, that's number one. And Krishna's like number two when you're from Bihar. But anyway, it's very interesting. The pastimes of Lord Ram, the pastimes of Krishna, Mahabharata. All right, anything else? I think we should end. We got tomorrow we're going to Radhakund. It's an easy day, not a lot of walking. We're going to see the holy places in Radhakund and hear about the different temples.
6:30
again? 6:30, yeah. And we're not going to walk to Radhakund. We're going to take some rickshaws to Radhakund from here. And then take a rickshaw back. But several rickshaws. So that'll be tomorrow's parikrama. And then I think at 2 o'clock we have the initiation. At 2 o'clock. in the Iskon Palace.
Happy.
Okay. Happy.
Just left tomorrow.
What? Only one in the station. Two. Nandula. Nandula
is taking initiation two. They're going to get his parents from the airport.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So he's taking initiation two. So we got two initiations. And engagements the next day.
Two engagements.
No, weddings.
Crazy. The weddings, yeah.
Sometimes.
Maybe there'll be two weddings. Gonna be even
more. Yeah, what'd you say? Right. Weddings are so expensive.
Oh, God.
They should
engagements
just do,
are expensive.
They should just do Gandharva weddings. It's just much more effective. Or Rakshasa weddings. Rakshasa is where you kidnap the girl. It's good. Krishna did it. Arjuna did it. It's perfectly bona fide.
Don't encourage Nandalal in these things.
He'll do it? Or?
Maybe possible. You're the guru, Maharaj. If you tell him to kidnap her,
parents would be very upset. But in the long run, they'll be happy because they'll save money.
Yeah, there you go.
The marriages are so expensive.
We won't curse you then.
I mean, marriages are so expensive. The parents spend years paying off mortgages on the marriages.
Yes.
And what do they get for it?
Oh, India is really bad.
Yeah,
the,
it's really bad.
It's crazy.
People actually mortgage their whole lives.
It's really sad here that, you know, they can't get good men for their daughters unless they pay them all the money.
Yeah.
Yes.
They spend their whole life just paying for that, you know.
Where does this dowry system come from?
It's illegal, but they do it anyway. Because if you don't have... if you don't have enough money, sometimes they call off the marriage even the same day, and the girl commits suicide.
Oh, all kinds of.
So many Bollywood movies
on that. Well, it's true. That's actually, it's a true thing that's happened in the past. It's actually, the dowry system in India is illegal, but people do it anyway because, you know, whatever.
It wasn't there in the Vedic culture.
Well, I mean, they had more money then. I mean, so it wasn't a problem. So I mean, the gold, they could just pick up off the ground, the pearls and everything like that.
And was it an every caste or just a
strategy? Yeah. It was important that there be gold. Well, the gold was there to provide for the security later on. I mean, there's a reason for it. It's not just...
The girl kept it, too.
The girl kept it. Yeah, it was her property.
Like nowadays, you know, the imports grab it.
Yeah.
But the girl actually kept that.
They call
it
Sridham and just with the lady.
Yeah, we had an interesting experience. One of my friends was in a marriage and he was giving gold bars, gold coins... Mm-hmm. Or got bar, no, it was bars, to the family. And the family was there with a checklist, you know, what everyone is given, everything like that. And then they asked him as he was giving the gold bars, how do we know this is real gold?
Oh.
You know, if it was me, I'd just say that, to hell with it. You're not getting any of it. You're going to insult me like that. I would say that, isn't it? But he was just so tolerant. He's one of my disciples. I said, you're too damn tolerant.
It's crazy.
I just slapped him in the face and said, you know, I'm taking back this cult.
Was it in Fiji or in India?
I'm not telling you where. It's
mostly because parents in India especially consider girls as their responsibility.
Yeah.
And they don't want anything that's happening at the marriage day. They would like to accept it.
Yeah.
Just that the girl gets married.
Yeah, yeah, they just accept it, just like...
Fiji?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Fiji, they don't give so much money.
It's a distortion of the real thing.
Yeah.
It's the Kali Yuga version. Mm-hmm.
It just becomes a financial exchange instead of...
Yeah.
And then the poor parents are painted off for so many years.
Oh.
I have another friend who got... His daughter married, and he was quite old. He was over 65, and he now for 20 more years he has to work a job.
He spent all his savings.
Yeah, he spent all his savings for 20 more years. He had to.
So he had to
sometimes.
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah,
I remember that. He told me.
Sometimes they demand after the marriage.
Yeah, he was about to retire and he just...
He just has to work and he's like, yeah, and he's had bypass surgery and everything.
Right. There should be something between the lack of everything in the West and the craziness of India.
Yes.
Something.
Okay, I better turn this off before they hear too many things.